The following Dharma encounter with Jeffrey Shug and Arnold Roshi took place at Zen Mountain Monastery at the conclusion to a week-long meditation session. As you'll hear, Dharma encounters begin with the introduction of a topic related to Zen practice and training. Students then volunteer to present their understanding of the topic or a question for the Dharma encounter teacher to reflect on. The presence of fellow students means that anyone in attendance can benefit from the exchange. We hope you enjoy.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. So this morning we are concluding our Midango session. And so we'll be entering into the third and final month of our spring Ango with the beginning of May. And so we're concluding the session with a Dharma encounter, as we did last month. And next month, Shinji, the chief disciple, will be here for the whole session, and will, on that day, she'll offer her first talk on the Dharma and engage the Sangha in Dharma encounter as sort of the culmination of the Ango and the completion of that training period, of our training period and her training period as a chief disciple, at which point she'll just continue on as a senior student. What I wanted to, I just wanted to begin by saying a few words about the Dharma holder that we, ceremony we did for a Shoan this morning. The traditional depiction of the path in the Zen tradition, the ox herding pictures and verses that we have downstairs, painted by Chikihara Sensei many years ago, is true in a sense. It's a good depiction of the various, some of the various stages or realms in which a practitioner travels through, struggles with, resolves through the course of their life as a practitioner. It can be misleading in the sense that each portrait seems to depict a stage which is distinct unto itself, and then you step out of that frame and you step into the next frame. And it's, of course, not like that. And so in that way, practice is a continuum. Our development and evolution as a student and as a Buddha is a continuum all the way through our lives. In Mizumi Roshi's time when he was teaching, when students got to the point where in the transmission of the Dharma, formal transmission, there's a body of teachings called the Kirigami, which means cut paper in Japanese. And these are collections of teachings that have been passed down orally and in written form that are particular to each lineage. And so within our lineage, there is a set of Kirigami that are passed down from teacher to disciple that the disciple copies from their teacher's copy. And that goes back to the beginning of when those started. And so they're really kind of a treasure trove of teachings from various masters going back that are not identified necessarily, and that are some of the last formal teachings that are given as part of the transmission. The first of those is called the first given Kirigami, the first given of those oral or written teachings, which is very simply an expression by the teacher of their intent to transmit the Dharma. And in that document, two short documents, it says that the message has been sent and not yet received. And so it speaks to the teacher's recognition of this student, this disciple, as a vessel of the Dharma, and that there is still training that needs to happen before that message is fully received and transmission takes place. When Mizumi Roshi did that, my understanding of how this began is that he gave that a name, Dharma holder, as a way of just recognizing a person at that stage of their training. And another way of thinking of it is that it's like entering into a stage of being, in a sense, a teacher in training. And so Shoan will, as I did, as Myotai Sensei did, as Ryushin Sensei did, as Hojin Sensei, all of the people in our Sangha who have received transmission, will begin to take on some teaching roles. So she'll have some opportunity to do interview with students, has already been offering retreats and teachings, and will continue to do that. So it's a process of beginning to step into that role and that responsibility so that both the person, in this case Shoen, and the Sangha can begin to form together, build that village together. One of the things that is important about it, this in Shoen's case, is I have decided to do that earlier in her training than was customary. When I received the first giving kitagami from my teacher, Dadaroshi, there was a year and a half or more between that and Denkai, which is the priestly transmission. And I'm doing this for Shoen even earlier. So what that means, there's going to be more time between now and then. So what the Sangha can really do to help this is not ask the question of when is she going to finish training. Okay, so let's just let that rest. The intention is that she will, and for now, that's all any of us know, right? I don't know the answer to that question. She doesn't know the answer to that question. And so we'll save everybody just a lot of mouth space by just letting that be. Okay. And one of the things that I think is worth noting, Dadaroshi used to speak about this, is that, you know, in the earlier stages, in important moments, entering as a student, doing Jikai, ordination, you know, these are fairly, chief disciple is one of the, Shuso Hosen is one of the sort of most dramatic ceremonies we do. As it goes on, those ceremonies become quieter and quieter, simpler and simpler in a certain sense, and ultimately transmission is done in private, which actually in the Zen tradition goes back to Huan Nung. And I think there's something quite beautiful about that, actually, that in a sense, as the transition itself becomes more significant, the expression of that becomes simpler and simpler, which is really befitting this path of selflessness. And yet, it is important to acknowledge it and to celebrate it. And so this morning we had our little celebration, and now things will carry on. So this morning in the Dharma Encounter, in just a brief word, the Dharma Encounter is one of the forms of teaching that we do in our tradition. In Doksan or Daisan, that's a face-to-face, private, confidential interaction, encounter with the student and teacher that really is just for the student. And so it's really done out of view. When we do mandos, which are informal, question and answer, that's more of a discussion, right? Some topic is brought up and we have a discussion. So it's more conceptual, more intellectual, and it's a valuable way of exploring and examining and clarifying certain aspects of our training. Dharma Encounter, the intention is for it to be more direct, less of a discussion, and more just trying to get to the heart of the matter through live questions and live answers. We're talking, so obviously it has a conceptual element, but the intention is to try and sort of go right into the heart of the matter, which depends, of course, on the student to a certain degree and where each of you are. And so we'll be drawing again, as we did last month, from the residents. And so each of you will bring yourself and your practice here, and which is wholly appropriate and right. And I will try as best I can to try and keep the encounters close to the bone. So what I wanted to look at today is we've been studying Dogen's 10 directions, all ango. And I've been giving talks on various sections of that as we've been moving through it. Working in the Sunday mandos that some of you have been joining in on each month, where we've been taking up this fascicle. And today what I wanted to do is look at the very end, where Dogen brings up this dialogue with a priest, Fengchan. And this is actually the last formal koan in the Gateless Gate collection by Master Wu Men. And in that, Master Fengchan was asked by a student, the world-honored ones, Buddhas, in the 10 directions, are all on the one path to nirvana. Let me ask you, where is that path? And Fengchan drew a line with his staff in the air and said, it's here. The world-honored ones in the 10 directions are all on the one path to nirvana, to liberation, to enlightenment. Where is that path? And Fengchan drew a line in the air and said, it's here. Master Dogen said, it's here means the 10 directions. The world-honored one is the staff. The staff is, it's here. The one path is no other than the 10 directions. Now, throughout the fascicle, Dogen has been speaking about the 10 directions. In the beginning, he said, a single fist, just this is the 10 directions. A sincere heart is the 10 directions. And then he went on to quote another master, Changsha, by saying that the eye of a student is the 10 directions. Everyday words, common words, are the 10 directions. The whole body is the 10 directions. The radiant light of the self is the 10 directions. Being within the radiant light of the self is the 10 directions. He said, there is no single person that is not the self. And this is the 10 directions. In the 10 directions, there is one path to nirvana. Where is that path? Fengchan says it's here. Dogen presents us with various other aspects of this. A fist, a sincere heart, an eye, everyday words, the whole body of a student, the radiant light of the self, within the radiant light of the self. There is no single person that is not this self, that is not this 10 directions. So the question, very simply, is what is where is this path? Fengchan says, it's here. How do you understand that? He also, Dogen says, the staff itself is the 10 directions. The one path is no other than the 10 directions, the Eightfold Path. Why does he call it the one path? In the Gateless Gate, Shibayama Roshi comments on this passage, on this teaching by Fengchan, and says, if Buddhas are all in the 10 directions, can there be any place where Buddha is not? If one has truly cast away oneself, everything, everywhere, is the blessing of the Buddha. There can be no place where Buddha light does not reach. So he offers his own comment on this. So as we've been studying this all along ago, what is the 10 directions? Fengchan says, it's here. Dogen says, the staff itself is the 10 direction. Fengchan says, it's a line drawn in empty space. The question is, where is the path to liberation? The path that you are on. The path that you are walking and practicing, the path that you are devoting considerable time and energy and heart and commitment to. In a way, really investing your faith in this path as a way, perhaps as your way, to liberation. So this question of where is the path is not an abstract question at all. And these teachers presenting all of these seemingly different ways of understanding it. Are they different? If not, then why is Dogen presenting all these different presentations? If they are different, then how can there just be one path? And so let's look at that. So someone will begin, Taikyo will begin, and She'll do three bows. And then some of you came up last month, which was wonderful. Why don't you pause for a moment and let the others who have not had a chance come up? And this is like face-to-face. When the call is given, you just move. And so this is that time. The call is being given. And if you don't have a sense of what you might ask, don't worry about that. There are worlds between here and there. Be brave.
Shosanchi. A sincere heart has brought me this far in my practice. And when it's not been present, when I've been cynical and detached and judgmental, I felt that viscerally. It's just not the way. And so the sincere heart, it doesn't let me down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What makes it not the way?
It's divided.
Your judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's splitting everything up into lots of little boxes.
So can you show me where that division is?
It's over there. What's that?
And so are you pointing to empty space?
Ultimately, I am pointing to empty space. But in the moment, it's your fault.
Okay. So there's the leap, right? There's something that's there. That in drawing this line, the danger is that there's a line been drawn. In forming a judgment, the danger is that we believe in the absolute nature, that the absolute truth of that judgment.
It seems pretty solid. It seems pretty reliable.
Right. Yeah. But Fung Chan draws this line here. So now, where is that line? May your life go well.
Oh, thank you for your teaching.
Sure, Sanji. Remind me of the man's name,
Fung Chan.
Fung Chan's line. Nom, 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 nom.
What are you eating?
Fung Chan's line.
Light?
Line.
Lie.
Well, line, the line,
line
that he drew. Very tasty.
Mm-hmm. So now where is it? What is the relationship between this line and the 10 directions? But you just ate it.
Yep.
So
here it is again.
So is it you or is it not you? This line.
I just keep eating.
So is that dissolving the self, that continuing to eat, or is it perpetuating samsara? Is it dissolving the desire, or is it feeding the desire?
In the short term, it seems like it's alleviating it. And then I'm making something.
Mm-hmm. But what happens when you eat something? What happens to that thing? Where does it go?
Digested, and it comes back out again.
Well, part of it does.
Yeah.
But what about the rest? Where is it now? So when you say you're eating this line, this Dharma, the 10 directions, where is it now? So to study that, to examine that. You know, I spoke about this yesterday, I think. How do the teachers point to that which has no place? How do they direct our attention as students of the way towards that which can't be found? And so we must use things, phenomena, to point our direction, to bring our attention to a place of study. And the danger in that is that we think that we're facing something, and then that becomes the object of our attachment, of our resistance, right? And we will find disappointment in that. The challenge, which is really up to each of us, is that we see through our careful examination that that too is a line drawn in empty space. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
And so teachers have spoken of building a palace in empty space, or on sand, or drawing the face of a Buddha on the surface of a clear pond. These different ways of trying to convey form is emptiness. Something appears, but it's not as it appears.
Shosanchi, I find that more and more when I open my mind and don't do anything, everything returns to just right here.
And where has it been?
Just right here.
Then why do you need to open your mind?
Because it has not been open.
And so when your mind is closed, how is that? And where is this mind that is closed? Can you show it to us?
I kind of just did, and I cannot.
So it's sort of, kind of. Okay, so some clarification there. So, drawing it in empty space, we see something. And yet, when we look closer, so that analogy of the magic show, right? Of watching a skilled magician, it's so wonderful, right? They show us things that aren't actually there, but we see them. And what a wonderful analogy of our mind. We are seeing something there, and it's acknowledged, right? Buddhism does not deny that something is there, but it urges us to look more closely. But we all have eyes, we have ears. So when we look closer, do we see anything different? Or do we need to learn how to look closer? And so how do you open your mind? How do you do that? Can you say?
I don't think I can say.
Neither can I. And yet, there is something that seems to be present when the mind is closed, as we experience it that way, and when the mind is open. And yet ultimately we see that itself is part of the magic show. That when thoughts appear, where do they come from? When they depart, where do they go? That itself is part of that magic show. And what are the implications of that? Right? Well, how does that serve you in the day when your mind is opening and closing, or in the moment when your mind is closed? How does that help you?
Well, I mean, in that moment, to the extent that I can remember, it is still a magic show, and my and particularly that my my closed mind is the match is not the truth.
So how does that influence your, let's call it your relationship with that closed mind, knowing that?
It loosens.
Right. It's, you know, it's a lot like advertising, you know, that when we don't understand it, when we don't see the tricks, we suddenly find ourselves wanting something we don't actually want, right? And so if we think of ourselves as master advertisers, right, to ourselves, of ourselves, right, we're working both ends. No wonder it's exhausting. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Xiu San Ji. The vastness, the sky, the wind, the water, oceans, and my mind, my heart, I feel it, I see it, the ground, the earth that I step on, that support me. I feel it. I see you, my teachers. I sense your love. I feel it. But sometimes I don't. I don't. And I feel it, that doubt. I feel that separation. When cloud in the sky, when the plastic things blocked the water, when the illness everywhere. Yes, I ask.
And how does that feeling, that separation, serve you, help you?
Yes, separation, because it let me feel the pain.
Right.
And the pain comes from the same place that I sense the love, joy. And so I know that I'm the path, I'm the way, I'm the sky. And I have to look deep into this mind that creating all this colorful of all this yes or no. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It sounds like a moon mind and cloud body.
You said it to me yesterday. And I thought about this. I love the moon mind. But how about the cloud body? What does that mean?
Mm. Indeed.
Yes.
What if it doesn't mean anything?
Yes.
What if it's not?
It's not. It's not. It's not. Yes, it is not. But you say it. And I like to look deep into that. Mm-hmm. And that's the practice. Yeah.
And to understand that saying it is that.
Yes. And it disappears.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Those who are coming up first get to go first through the food line.
So, Sanji. So I'm feeling really nervous right now, and I feel my heart beating really intensely.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dogen said that a sincere heart is the 10 directions. But sitting in line and sitting here, I feel so myself and just me. And so I don't see how that's the 10 directions. Mm-hmm.
Is there sincerity in that beating heart?
I think so.
What is sincerity? Speak from that place. What is sincerity?
It's wanting to see and wanting to be here and be connected.
What makes that not just more desiring, grasping, clinging?
Because when I'm feeling sincere, I'm not really looking for anything.
When you say you're nervous, when you sort of share that, open that up, does that change anything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I met with a group of students yesterday morning, and one of the students talked about how in a group setting like that, it makes them nervous to speak. And I just acknowledge that that's true for many people, right? I mean, this is putting yourself on the spot, right? In front of hundreds and hundreds of people. It's so wonderful to be able to say that. That would be true. And that I was remembering when I was in my early years with my teacher, in particular, in a setting like this, and how I was sincere and scared and nervous and wanted to be a good student and wanted my teacher to believe that I was a good student, that I was worthy of his time, and that if he believed that, then maybe I would believe that too. And so I wanted to show him all of that. I didn't want to show him my nervousness, right? And I was sharing that when I first started teaching, the first time that a student came into face-to-face and sat in front of me, just like you are now, and said, I'm so nervous. And I just felt all of the charge leave the room. And I thought, oh my God, you can do that. You can just say, I'm really nervous. And it's like, I never thought of that. So, it goes both ways. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shanji, when you speak of the 10 directions, the fist, the line, the heart, it's as if there's no words. It's like this falling forward with this invisible string, and there's this knowing, deep knowing, and then my mind doesn't know. It judges, it says there can't be, and yet there's this knowing, there's this falling, there's this openness to this, to this.
Its whole purpose is to call you in. When Dogen holds up a fist or says the entire 10 directions is the radiant light, is the self of the student, is the body of the student. When Fung Chung draws a line, its only purpose is to call you in. Just that. And so what do you do being called when you hesitate or retreat? What can you do?
Nothing. It's when I try to do something, that's when it disappears. That's when I can't see the line. That's when I can't feel my heart. Mm-hmm. And I know that, and yet mm-hmm. there it is. Mm-hmm. And then it's mm-hmm. gone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like grasping back for something secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the delusion. It's not secure. Not in that way. Mm. And that's why the Buddha said dukkha is disappointment. We will be disappointed in everything that we reach for, whether it's virtuous or not virtuous. We will be disappointed because it is not that. It is not that security that we're seeking, which is a sense of protection from reality, from impermanence, from pain. And that attempt to secure ourselves actually makes us much, much more precarious and fragile. And isn't that what we see? The more we grasp, the more frenetic we become. Mm. Why is it that since the time of the Buddha, practitioners sitting and facing that which nobody wants to face? You'd think that would cause the frenzy and the panic and the frenetic mind. And there are moments where that occurs, but those moments are when you're describing, when we're reaching back for something secure. In the moments of falling in, being called in, it's quite different. There's a natural you. And so, what does that tell you about what practice is? What do you need to do each day?
To be okay with the nothingness and to allow myself to fall and not try to grasp mm-hmm. on as I fall.
Which means as you're falling, give up the name nothingness, line, fist, Sarah, all of it. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanshi, I was struck by this line, and I realized I needed to walk it and get on it and sit here in front of you and keep walking the line.
What does that mean?
I think it means stepping in
to
whatever shows up in the way it shows up, in the way that I'm afraid of it. I'm not sure exactly what it is I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perhaps the nothingness or whatever.
Stepping into what appears before you in the way that it appears to you.
Yeah.
Yes. But what about when something else appears? Like what it should be or what it was before.
Yeah.
Or what will happen if you take that step?
What will happen if I don't?
Indeed. And so the aspect of mindfulness, which is remembering, recalling, you know what will happen if you don't. More or less.
Yeah, it's already happened.
Right. And so, you know, I was saying yesterday, we can have the experience. We can have an experience again and again and again and continue to be surprised by that which is appearing and by what happens next, even though we have been down that road so many times. So what kind of forgetting is that? And so when we think of remembering, you know, I remember Robert Thurman was here years ago, a well-known Buddhist scholar and first monk of the Dalai Lamas, and was a friend of the monastery for many years. And he was here one time and he asked somebody, he was giving a retreat and he asked somebody, like, I don't know, how long they've been sitting and how much they sit. And the student was very shy. You know, they were trying to be humble and selfless and they didn't want to say. He said, no, no. He said, you should log it. You should put it up on a chart and count the hours and celebrate it. Because you're in all of that practice, we're developing, gaining experience as we are learning to give up our gaining. But we are developing experience, right? Which is like the Manny Gem, right? You can't give someone experience. Right? I can share my experience with you, but I can't give you experience. Only you can do that. Yeah. And we only find that through our actual practice. And then that we call upon. So when we're recalling, when we're remembering moments of intersection, standing at a junction. What do I know about this? What have I learned? What do I know about fear? What has been shown to me?
That's a question. My fear is probably going to do more damage than the actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And so you know that. Is that enough?
Something else is needed to push past that.
Right.
Which is enough.
Which is?
Just to say enough. Like enough fear, enough. And step in.
Yes. We must step in. That is the key. Awareness alone is not enough. We can see and understand and be aware of our grasping, of our false views, of our deep dispositions and inclinations. But if we don't step forward, Dogen said, if we don't step forward, we will not encounter the way. If we don't bend, yield, we will continue to cycle through birth and death. And so both of those working together. You know, Shanti Davis speaks of bringing forth bodhicitta, the aspiration to liberate ourselves and others. He calls that adopting bodhicitta. And then he says, but then you must attend bodhicitta. Attend to it. Adopting is like what happens when you're sitting on the couch, right?
Yeah.
Adopting is what happens when you get off the couch,
yeah.
Right? And that's why we speak of ourselves as practitioners. That is very, very key. Right, we are practicing the Dharma. We should never underestimate the power, the depth and breadth of that, the refuge of that. Yes. May your life go on.
Thank you.
What that means is that there's never a time when there's nothing we can do. Where there's never a time or a situation in which the Dharma is not present and practicable.
Shashanchi. I don't know, the line came up of all forms are the Buddha's sutras. And it's like, wow. Thank God for the 10 directions that all forms can be what they are.
Well, how do you understand that? All forms, all things are the sutras. How is that so?
All forms are no forms. So, can I hear it?
So then, being formless, how can we hear it?
Oh, God, look at that chunk of plastic. Shot someone again? Oh, my God.
So, in the dialogue with Dungshan and the National Teacher, we have to learn how to hear with our eyes and see with our ears. We have to be able to hear the voice of the insentient. We have to be able to hear and see beyond the sound and the form, which is why we sit on this diamond seat, to quiet to step away from the windows of our senses and stop watching and waiting for something familiar. And what happens? It's like night vision. You know, when the light goes off for a moment, it seems as though we can't see anything. But in that very moment, we are seeing something. Darkness.
Right. Yeah.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shosanchi. Well, it's everywhere, but the two places I'll point to here is one place is that in any moment when a cloud has come, when I'm in a negative emotion, or as Gokhan used a word, closed, I think, I have everything in the moment to clear that up. I don't always, so I'm not always able to do it, but I have no doubt that there's plenty in the toolbox, mm-hmm. And perhaps my practice is just accessing that becoming the toolbox. There's no separation. Mm-hmm.
For the time being. Mm-hmm. For the time being. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you a question. You said it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. That is true. Mm-hmm. How does that put you on the very edge of a precarious cliff? What is the danger in that, in saying that? It's everywhere.
Well, then perhaps there's nothing that chooses and I'm not taking responsibility anymore.
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to say the words, it's mm-hmm. everywhere. Mm-hmm. The Ten Directions, Dogen says it. Mm-hmm. I can say it. The entire world is the Ten Directions. It's here. The question is, that's true, but is it true for you? Is it true for me? That's the danger. In other words, that with the words, mm-hmm. we begin to feel good mm-hmm. about saying those words. Mm-hmm. They're Dharma words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still words.
So vast and boundless. Let's mm-hmm. say it again. So vast and boundless. Mm-hmm. Right? And we can get friends together, we can all mm-hmm. say those words.
Mm-hmm. The place I was thinking, my original thing was that before he says it's there and he's just drawing it, that's where it is. It's closer before there's a word about it. Exactly. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, Dogen, he says it's here because he's certain we'll miss it. And in saying it's here, to bring our attention, to call us in, he knows he's just committed a crime. But it's for our benefit. Hmm. But to really appreciate that in our gaining confidence within our practice, with the Dharma, with the teachings, letting them occupy our own mouth, to know and to constantly be aware of the gap between what we can say and what we know to be true, so that we can practice there. It's not a measuring stick. It's so that we don't fool ourselves, and we see that gap, and that's where we enter. Mm-hmm. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shanti, the other day I came out of the Zendo into the world and everything felt really different to me. It felt like the trees, the earth, the clouds, everything was breathing. Mm-hmm. And the birds, they were singing. And I felt like I was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I have a really tender heart, so I'm a little bit afraid going back into the world and how to cultivate that, mm-hmm, without feeling that the entire weight of all the suffering in the world is carried on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I try to do good, mm-hmm, but sometimes it feels like I can't keep up.
With what?
With all the suffering.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, that's why we chant every night. We say, you can't. Right? Sentient beings are numberless. Mm-hmm. You can't keep up with all of them. So then how do you understand I vowed to save them?
Trying to do my best and do good.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about that experience you were having in the woods and feeling sort of your union, is there any relationship between that and this entire world as the Ten Directions? This body is the Ten Directions?
It is, but it's hard to put a grasp it or to say what it is.
Maybe you don't have to.
Yeah. It's this feeling of oneness or connectedness, mm-hmm, with everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that moment is true. And it's impermanent. It comes and goes. And so in worrying about when you return home, right, or that you won't be able to find your way back, mm-hmm, don't. Don't try and find your way back to anything, right? That's an illusion. Mm-hmm. But you said cultivate, mm-hmm, right, which is an agricultural term, right? You cultivate a flower, mm-hmm, a plant. Vegetables, fruits, they feed you, they give us life. Mm. They feed those creatures that you were feeling unified with. We can cultivate, mm, right? And rather than carrying the weight of the suffering on your shoulders, mm, let it in. It's calling you in. Mm. When Dogen said, the sincere heart, just this, is crystal clear. He means is there's no obstruction in it, right? It can hold, right? When we don't hold on. So think of yourself as a house where every door and every window is open. And those winds of suffering blow in and they fill the house, but they blow through, right? You don't lock them in. Right, because then the house becomes very
uninhabitable.
Right, you can't breathe.
Yeah.
Right, mm. And so, but while they blow through, you feel them, mm, right? And those winds are calling to you. They're calling to each of us. How do we respond? Mm. Right, not responding is not an option. Right, we cannot not respond. And so how do we respond is the great question of the Bodhisattva. It's the great question of Canon. Mm-hmm. It's our question. It's my question. I ask myself frequently, not how can I respond, but how am I responding? Because I am all the time. You are all the time. Right? We're not practicing for another time. Mm-hmm. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Oh, it's you.
Hello, teacher. Did you think I was someone else?
I thought you were Shugan for a moment.
It's a big joke.
You mean that you are or you aren't?
Who is Shugan?
What?
What?
Is that the joke?
I don't know.
But what can you do about that? What can you do about that?
I must rely on my good intention. What else could I possibly do?
Is that enough?
What else could I possibly do?
What is the spring blossom that is almost hidden?
Am I blushing?
That place is most exquisite. I almost don't forget to remember.
Then I will treasure it
through all the days of your life.
Through all the days of my life.
But putting that aside, this faith that you spoke of, what about that?
Please teach me.
How else could you say it?
100,000 ways. Please teach me.
Very well. Very well. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
In the fasting, Dogen said, a meal waits for you to eat it, a robe waits for you to wear it. What a pity if you don't take it up while it's being given to you. He said, this meal wants you to eat it, this robe wants you to wear it, this seat wants you to occupy it, this mind wants you to realize it. When we reflect on things that way, what shifts? How does it change things? Celebrating Earth Day that took place this week, when we look and really examine and allow ourselves to feel the suffering that we have created on this beloved Earth, we can think that we don't belong here, that if we just left, everything and every being would be so much better off. But I don't believe that. I don't believe any creation has been put here undeservedly. And that if we don't understand its function or our function, then we just don't understand. And to think that the earth is presenting itself to us and is waiting for us, wanting us to come to it, is calling to us that the Dharma, which is no thing and no consciousness, if we think of it as a force, as something true, something reliable, is calling to us, is waiting for us. Maybe in those gaps when our mind is closed or we forget, we stumble, we misstep, and the pain of that, maybe the pain of that that we feel is being invited and not responding, is being called and not falling in, is that there is a meal waiting for us that has been so carefully prepared, and we're not sitting down to eat. And the pain of that gap of not knowing, of not responding, gets our attention, calls to us. So in that way, the pain of our samsara becomes our ally, right? A frequent visitor that is calling us to the table. It's a very kind of generous way to think of what we often think of as our obstacles and struggles and delusions, brokenness. And so that parable of the jewel sewn into the robe of the traveler who struggled because they didn't know they had such wealth, the image of the person sitting by the river calling out for someone to please bring them something to drink. All of these different ways of trying to communicate that we are sitting in the midst of abundance, we are being called to the table that has been laid for us, we are being called to this cushion that has been prepared for us. And that in our time, in our ways, we are setting that table for today and tomorrow. And that can also give us a very different way of thinking about our own practice. That we have such a deep responsibility, and it doesn't belong to us. That we are setting a table so that others can come to eat, right? And entering into training, showing up for the first time this morning, putting yourself on the line here, being ordained, becoming a Dharma holder, all of these are steps along the way of making that table abundant and delicious. May our lives go well.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.